Hello and welcome to P4A's Let's Talk Rare, a monthly podcast from Partners for Access.
Bringing you the most important news, trends and discoveries in the world of orphan drugs and cell and gene therapy.
Join me, Georgie Rack.
And me, Owen Bryant.
To analyse these developments and what they mean to you. Hi everyone, and welcome to our EPA special podcast. So guys, we are live at the EPA in Amsterdam. Today is the pre-day, so we've arrived on Monday, and actually what that means is we're setting up our booth, we're having a little nosy on other people's booths, just really getting a sense of the area, where the tracks are, and really what's going on. And I'm joined by my very tall colleague from Switzerland, Pina. So she's helping me because obviously she's tall and I need some help putting this booth up because I've got short legs. So hi, Pina. Thank you for helping me.
Hey, Georgie. Of course, I'm helping you. If that's the only qualification you need from me, my height, I'm always happy to help you. And it's also great to do some hands-on stuff.
Absolutely. It's the most important part, Pina, getting our booth looking sparkly and lovely and inviting. So lots of people want to come over and say hello. And we've also, you'll be pleased to know, guys, got a coffee machine. So if you are here, don't forget to come over and grab a free coffee from us. Now, just thinking about the conference, is there anything, Pina, that you're really looking forward to? Any particular sessions that are really standing out for you at the moment?
Yeah, I think it's the, let's say, whole evergreen topic about the AI and how this can help us in the future. And I'm very much looking forward. I think there's a panel discussion on the second day as well with industry representation, but also like a payer perspective. And at the same time, I think it's also nice what we've seen last year and what we see also as a theme this year is the patient experience side and putting the patient in the center. Yeah, and I think then there's other topics that also stick out and I guess they're coming back all the time. It's like, how can we actually make sure that this is all sustainable, the business that we work in? How can we make sure we find different pricing approaches? So yeah, very much focused on the rare disease track, of course, but yeah, very much looking forward.
Okay. And you'll be pleased to know, guys, we just had a new addition. Sam Morrison has found our booth. She's working her way over to us now. She's missed all the hard work. So never mind, Sam, but it's really great to have you with us. And I'll just ask you the same question that I just asked Pina. Is there anything in particular that you're really looking forward to at this conference? Are there any sessions that are really standing out to you? Or are you just here for some networking and kind of making new friends and meeting new people? What is it that you're really looking forward to at the EPA this year?
Well, obviously, meeting old friends and new friends, that's always a key activity at EPA. But I think I heard Pina mention the sustainability there, but I think that's really key and looking at how much of an environmental impact we have in the pharma industry and in healthcare in general is really an important and exciting area to start thinking about and looking at and how we can be not just more sustainable financially, but more sustainable in looking after the planet as well.
Great. Thank you so much, ladies. So everyone, we're in booth 102. Don't forget to stop by and come and get your free coffee and do say hello to us. I will be in the booth on a permanent basis. So I do come and keep me company and make me smile. So looking forward to seeing you all, guys.
Hello, I'm Pina. I'm here with Juliet from the AK Various. I'm also joined by my wonderful colleague, Georgie. And you've just joined this panel. And so we want to ask you three questions. Okay. So the first question we want to ask you, like, how are you enjoying the conference so far?
Well, for me, it's the second time that I come. And I'm getting there, understanding more how things work from the other side of the rare disease. Mm-hmm. So it's becoming more interesting. And what I see is that the patient voice and the patient perspective is coming more presence in every speech I've attended.
Okay. And you've been part of this like panel that was basically looking at the rare disease
barriers and solutions.
Exactly. Can you tell us a bit more of like what was discussed and your key takeaways as well?
This panel, there were five of us and four of us were from the company on the other side of the rare disease. And I was from the patient advocacy point of view. And what you can see is that they are really beginning to appreciate and work together that the patient voice needs to be involved as the beginning from every HTA process or even as the beginning of any drug development or clinical trials. So it's nice to see that we are being given the voice to be able to share what we feel instead of what people read on a paper.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess like all of us have met you last year, right? So when was your first EPA? And I think we've discussed a bit like that we've seen baby steps like from last year to this year. If we were to predict the future, or if you could have a wish for next year, how would you paint your ideal next year?
For me, my dream would be that there will be speeches from patients, advocacy or organizations together with the other companies, but giving the voice to the patient to express how can we work together, how can they reach us, or how can we reach them.
Okay. One of your panelists was also saying, like, we do patient journeys and it's sometimes never done, like, with actually asking the patients involved there as well. From your perspective, because you've also worked with a pharma company, like, what is the critical success factors that also contribute to the success of a company listening to the patient, but also, like, how much can you contribute on this side?
That is a fine line. Because in some way, you want to be able to be one-to-one with the pharmaceutical company and be able to share everything and ask many questions to be able to know if they are dealing with the unmet needs. Mm-hmm. But on the other side, we do not cross that line. We just share what we need, and when they need the expertise from our side, from the AK Warriors, they reach to us to be able to understand better what is needed. Yeah. It's like not only about having the orphan drug, but what else, which add value they can do, how can they help us through the journey, do we need an app or do we need something else or to reach up the drug, because you have now the early access program, but as I was mentioning in the panel, you may have the early access program, but having it in home, it's another thing.
So there's still a lot to do, Juliet, but At least pharmaceutical companies are actually starting to listen, which is great. And it's great to have you back on the podcast. I think my last question to you, Julia, I see you so active on the social media. I see AK Warriors, hashtag AK Warriors everywhere on LinkedIn and all of my socials that I look at. What next for the AK Warriors? What have you got planned? Anything exciting coming up or anything you want to share with our listeners?
Well, there's going to be an honorary board member that will be joining the foundation that is someone on the top level with experience. And that will give credibility to us and also to know that we're working as a team and we will focus and keep raising awareness, create material for the medical community also. And contact lens users and AK Warriors going to the journey to help them take the step what they need to take. And like I said, with the medical community, help us stop the 80% misdiagnose, the right treatment, apply a protocol for pain management, which does not exist, and also psychological support.
Very good. Fantastic. So we'll be looking forward for once you will reveal this secret news. And we'll be following you on LinkedIn and on all the other channels.
And thank you for having me.
Thank you
so much, Juliet.
Bye.
So today I'm joined by Sandrine Ruiz. Sandrine is the Senior Director of Market Access, Pricing and HEOR at Immunicore. So Sandrine, how are you finding the conference?
Very interesting, amazing conferences, amazing talks we have during the sessions and nice round tables and panels. So happy to be here, to be honest.
What are you looking to get out of this conference? Are there any particular sessions that have really stood out to you?
I'm very interested in digital information and what's new and what do we have to bring with us nowadays. Also in the new trends and the different topics we've been having on what we have to take care about. And patient was a key element we had yesterday at the open panel. So a lot of things like that. And meet also my peers, colleagues and partners, because we have to make it happen in the market access world.
Okay. And you mentioned your panel yesterday. So can you tell me any key takeaways that came out of that panel?
It was a very interesting and diverse panel where we discussed barriers and solutions for access to rare diseases. And to be honest, it's not that easy. We have a lot of barriers and patients are not even consulted in the discussions we're having with payers and HTA bodies, but we have solutions. So we do not have to give up and make sure we speak to the right stakeholders internally and externally and make sure we can provide access to the patients who need treatment. And it's a rare disease, it's very few patients, but to be honest, we have to fight for them. So thank you.
That's great. Thank you so much for your time and enjoy the rest of the conference.
Thank you.
we've managed to find Neil Grubert at the EPA conference. How are you going, Neil?
I'm very well, thank you.
And how are you enjoying the conference so far?
Yeah, I'm enjoying it. Some good sessions, enjoyed the plenaries and some of the panel discussions, and some good networking opportunities. Been good to catch up with some old friends and colleagues, some I haven't seen in quite a few years, and also to make some new connections. So yeah, enjoyed it very much.
Brilliant. And you was on a panel yesterday and the topic was around the EU-HTA, joint HTA. Can you tell us a little bit about that and any key takeaways that come out from that session?
Yeah, I mean, clearly a hot topic.
Absolutely.
It was well attended. I was going to say it was standing room only, but went beyond that. We had people sitting on the floor in the middle aisle wanting to hear about the subject. So yeah. I think it's a sign of just how much interest there is in the subject and indeed concern about that, which I think is understandable when we consider where we are. Yesterday was 10 months to the day until the start of the process, and we've obviously just had the first implementing act, which has been helpful up to a point in answering some questions, but I think it's also raised some new questions and been a delay with other implementing acts. So we wait to see what they will contain, and the last of those may not be published until the third or fourth quarter of the year. So I think there's growing unease about just what's going to mean in practice. We sort of shared some thoughts about how many of the HTA agencies feel that they're not particularly well prepared for the start of joint HTA. You know, it's clearly going to be disruptive, yeah. But what's not so clear is how much of an impact it will have in practice. So it's something of a paradox, really, it seems to me.
Yeah.
And there are certainly concerns on the side of the industry, just in terms of what it's going to mean. We commented on the sense of frustration, the lack of involvement that the industry's felt, both in shaping the process generally and the prospect that companies will play a very limited role in scoping the assessment for their own products. And then there are some other sort of concerns around timelines, for example. And I think one of the points that occurred to me and that I just wanted to share with the audience was, particularly if we see growing pressure on companies to launch within 2 years of marketing authorization, towards the end of that window, will a joint clinical assessment report that was published within weeks of marketing authorization still be timely, or yeah. You know, will they need to
I mean, it's incredible when you think about that, Neil, because no company's actually managed to do that. Anybody that's launched in Europe, whether that be a gene therapy, an orphan drug, or just a generic, have never launched it in all member states in Europe.
No.
So, I mean, this is really uncertain territory, as you say, we're moving into. And we're seeing from our side, it's not actually putting manufacturers off launching in Europe. We thought maybe it's going to de-incentivise Europe, but actually it's not. But a lot of companies now are kind of watching and waiting. I think they're waiting for the first company to kind of go through that process.
For sure.
Some key learnings to come out of that. And then kind of thinking about their strategy moving forward.
Oh, absolutely. I'm sure every company is going to be closely following the first few joint clinical assessments to see how they work. And it's going to be interesting to see, you know, whether there is any flexibility, if there's any further slippage on the timelines leading up to the start of the process. Will there need to be some concessions in practice? It'll also be interesting to see the response from the member states, how they'll use that, and indeed, you know, how satisfied they will be with the outputs, because, you know, I think some of the indications are that Germany and France are probably likely to dominate the process of compiling the reports, which will obviously please them, they'll be to their satisfaction, but will that necessarily meet with the expectations and wishes of all of the other member states? And of course, many of them have some major challenges to gear up for that. They've got relatively immature HTA systems, and even some of the more developed ones have concerns about their capacity, funding for that additional work, and the fact that they may or will have to go through this process for all new drugs in the future, which is something that they don't necessarily have to do at present. So I think that was one of the messages that the industry's been trying to articulate for a while. Will this process achieve the intended objective of reducing the workload for everyone involved, or is there a real risk that it could have the opposite effect? And actually increase the workload.
So
I guess we'll have to wait and see.
Exactly. It's going to be very, very interesting to watch that transpire. Thank you so much for your time today, Neil, and enjoy the rest of the conference.
Thanks very much.
Thank you so much.
Hello, I'm Pina. I'm here with Sima Sondi from Takeda. Sima, before we get started with the questions, could you just quickly introduce yourself?
Hello, nice to be here, Pina. I'm Seema Sondi, as you said. I'm head of payer value and access for our vaccines division within Takeda.
Okay, thank you. So how are you enjoying the conference so far?
It's actually great. I haven't been to one of these for a number of years, so it's really good to see what's going on and also to keep bumping into old colleagues.
I agree. In full disclosure, Seema was my boss in a previous life. What was your highlight so far, or any things that stood out, topics?
So actually, I really like the AI and market access panel discussion this morning. Yeah. I think for me, that's something we've been looking at in my role, and really seeing how we could make better use of AI. We started doing a few bits, but I think there were some really nice ideas there, and there was a payer there, which I think really brought it to life.
Yeah, I agree. I think I also attended this panel. It was very nice to see, and I guess we also had this discussion around like how we all think should be less people maybe needed with AI, but we also heard a lot from the industry where they thought, well, maybe we need more people, and it's an interesting field. We also look into this as a consultancy. Now, can you tell us a bit more about the panel discussion you just also attended, like any key takeaways that you want to mention?
Yeah, sure. The panel discussion was around tiered pricing and whether it actually helps patient access.
Yeah.
And what are the key takeaways? So conceptually, everyone thought this is a good idea, and it's actually a very responsible way for pharma companies to try and get patient access. I think one of the key things was it does help patient access for certain types of drugs or vaccines, but not everything.
Yeah.
And it's just not feasible for certain very sophisticated treatments like CAR T, stem cell, etc. You know, I think the example that was given is, you know, if you're going to spend $2 million, a country in Africa would rather probably spend that $2 million on malaria prevention or something like that rather than for one patient with gene therapy.
Yeah.
The other key thing was that it is a tool. It is not the only tool that we can use for patient access. So we really need to think of it in the context of applying it with other things as well. And also things like voluntary giving up pet patents, no profit selling in certain countries. So I think there were some interesting discussions there.
Okay. And sorry, just one last question now. Because you've also had like numerous roles in the industry, like you've worked on, like now currently you're working on vaccines, but you've also like very much worked in the rare disease space, and now I guess the discussion on pricing also triggered it, because yesterday we also heard that there might be different approaches needed. Do you think that there we will see some involvement in the future? Because you also said like, well, the tier pricing wouldn't work for CAR Ts, but it would work like this. I mean, also I'm just saying now, crystal ball gazing, is there anything, any thoughts you might have that we might see any changes with regards to the pricing becoming more tailored for certain products?
I think we have to try different things. And this was actually, this also came out in the session. What we're talking about is getting the product, the medicine or the vaccine to the patient. So it's really about how do we do that?
Yeah.
So yes, I think tiered pricing is here to stay.
Yeah.
Many companies are already doing it. But I also think we need to have some other mechanisms as well. So I do think that there's a future where, whether it's innovative contracting, whether it's, like I said, giving up your license or some other mechanism, I think there's definitely other areas that we can go to.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much.
So we're at the end of the conference, guys. We've all travelled home. As you can hear, my voice is a little bit croaky from all the talking and not much sleep. But we had a really, really great conference. We met some really, really great people. We had lots of traffic through our booth, which was really great. And it was lovely to connect with old colleagues. I saw quite a few of my old line managers that I've worked with before. So it was really nice to see them and catch up on what they've been doing. So that was my take on it. But also, I don't know if you guys were there, but if you were, Sam Morrison's presentation actually on patient experience data and really putting the patient at the center of drug development. It was a great, great session, guys. Don't worry if you missed it. We will be putting that on our website. So it will be available with the slides, and you can request a copy of that actual presentation that we'll be more than happy to send over to you. So keep an eye on our LinkedIn post for when that will be available, but also do check out our website, because there's lots of cool stuff on there to go and look at, and also our previous conferences. And if you were there and you have access on the Terrapin app, luckily I'm calling it that now, it's not Swapcard anymore, it's the Terrapin app. And the slides are also on there available for download. So please do check those out. Really, really great. So guys, we're at the end. We're all back home. I'm in London. Pina's in Zurich. Sam's back in Bedford. How did you find the conference? Did you enjoy it?
Yes, I did enjoy the conference. The same as you, I've also met a lot of like old colleagues, not so many old line managers. Maybe that's a good thing. But yeah, it was nice to also connect with old friends. And as Sema said, like also meeting new faces. I guess the networking that we get out of this conference is like very invaluable. You also get the opportunity to speak to other peers, but also get an opportunity to learn from them. And I guess what stood out is also like speaking to the patient. I know on these conferences, usually we don't find so many patients, but I think we're actually on the lucky side that we also have some connections there. And it's also great to see bigger representation, I want to say, of patients themselves, but also patient associations, just also highlighting it, not just from an industry perspective, but also from the patient side, because I think it's still something that we lack in our daily work, I would say. I mean, we're all getting better, but at the same time, I feel we're always talking about them, but not so much with them. The other thing, as I said in the intro, was very interesting to listen to this panel about AI and also learn about how the implementation will be working in like some bigger companies. I think we heard from BMS, but also Takeda. It was quite surprising for me as well to see that some of those companies are still actually working in some silos where you still think a lot of work is duplicated. And I think even one of the opinion was maybe it might require at the beginning even more staff in order to introduce this, where we all think, I guess, AI should just make our lives easier. But I guess in order to get there, we're still a bit far from this point. I don't know, Sam, if you wanted to add something as well.
I would just echo that it's really nice to see the patients there. And you're right, we do all of this for our patients and then we don't talk to them about it, which has always struck me as slightly odd in this area. But it's nice to see them getting a larger voice and attending conferences like this to help them understand. I also met a number from the NHS, which were attending the conference, who weirdly, or maybe not weirdly, given the size of the NHS, were meeting each other there for the first time and understanding that, to your point about silos, they had resources that they hadn't realised they had internally that they could draw on to help them. Different and new stakeholders there as well. So that's always nice to see. I think as well, I saw that things that we were predicting there in terms of the orphan drug legislation and how that was going to change, maybe now we're back. That's already changed from what we were discussing last week. So very interesting to see how quickly sometimes things can move.
Yeah, and I also think the JCA, of course, so the UHTA, if you want to call it like this, is also a very prominent topic. I think it is something that already keeps us up for for a longer time already. And it was also still interesting to see how much uncertainty there is still around it. I mean, we're basically talking about like next year, which is very much around the corner. And I think if clients come to us and say, oh, actually, we want to do this next year and we're just start the work now, I guess we all get a bit nervous. So the whole uncertainty you could also feel in the room. I think there was also criticism around this as well, being so much still up in the air. So let's also see. And I think it's good to voice it. At the same time, I guess we just need to face the changing environment. So, of course, we'll keep up to date with all those news as well, but so do our counterparts and also like the industry as well. But I think it's more just really like having not a real clarity going forward. It's just, introducing uncertainty for everyone in this whole process. So, yeah, that was also still an interesting point, because I guess if you would have asked me personally last year, I would have thought we're much more far ahead. But good thing I didn't bet my money on it.
Yeah, about 10 years ago, I think we were talking about joint HTA assessments. And at the time, we came to the conclusion we wouldn't see it. I now think we will see it, but I think it's going to take a few years before we see something that's stable.
Exactly.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, ladies. As you can hear, it was a really, really great conference. Some really, really interesting sessions. I thought what you guys are talking about, it was really great to see patients there. I go to quite a few conferences. As you know, we sponsor quite a few of them across the year. It's very, very rare you actually see patients at conferences. And even though, you know, that's why we come to work every day, it's why we do what we do, is to make sure all patients have access to treatment, whatever their age, race, diverse, you know, wherever they are in the world. And that's something that we're really, really passionate about at Partners for Access. So again, I really urge, come along more. I really urge patients to get involved and to really get their voice out there, because the more patients that come along to these types of conferences really, really helps drug developers actually understand it from the patient perspective and really, really make sure that they are incorporating that patient voice into drug development very, very early on, right through to post-launch activities. So That's one to watch, guys. AI is a big, big theme. Again, one to really look out for coming up. And also the EU HTA implementation, as Pina was talking about. It's coming into force in 2025 in January. So literally a few months away. And there still is so much uncertainty around this. I know UKOPA are doing some working groups and they're putting quite a lot of information out on this. I'll put some valuable links in our description of the podcast that you guys can look up and read about as you go through.
Really sorry to interrupt, but I think this whole point that you made on the patients is very important, right? Because last year I met this patient who was actually suffering from a rare disease, and it was because you encouraged me to reach out to other stakeholders as well. Now, I think we've basically made quite a good connection, and I've now seen her again. And I also feel, yes, it's great to see the patients there, but I also can very much understand how overwhelming it can be, because for us, it's very normal to navigate those discussions around HTAs. What is a fair price? And even like we asked by our clients, how can we charge a fair price? What is sustainable, as Sam has said, not just from a healthcare perspective, but also from an environmental perspective as well, if we want to open up this whole can of worms. But I also feel there's still a lot maybe that we can do as well, like to educate, because I think between the sessions, I was also trying to give a bit of context, trying to explain a bit, because otherwise, I guess, like you're just swimming in this whole storm of like pharma companies talking about different pricing mechanisms and there's no understanding. So I think as well from our side, at least that's very much what became quite evident to me, is like we can do also a good job helping them, like being a bit of a voice or a stepping stone, if you want to call it like this.
A translator. Exactly. Yeah, it's translating the science language actually over into normal language that people can understand. Because I spoke to the same patient and it was that, you know, they're sort of following and they're understanding what's going on. But the terminology that's used and some of the scientific words that are used, they just don't understand it. And if then you can translate that over actually into a meaningful language that everyone understands, or universal language, should we say, that everyone understands, they're going to be much more educated and much more on board and understand really where drug developers are coming from and the HTA systems and all of the other stuff that incorporates trying to launch a drug, especially in the rare disease space. So maybe a big call out for that. Let's translate language. Let's really, really make it applicable to the patients, so they really understand from a science perspective actually what that means to them and how it can support them.
Yeah, and I think that's also when it becomes truly inclusive, right? And I think that's what also Sam was alluding to in her presentation, like just making sure we're not just thinking, but we really like take them along. And if there's some education or like help, as you said, can be done, I think then we can all take it forward.
Absolutely. Any last words from you, Sam?
I was just going to say on that point, I think that's the key thing, isn't it? We have to ensure patients understand what we're asking them and understand what impact their input will make. And we too often ask them a question and then run off to the back room to work it out and work out what we're going to do about it. And they don't feel listened to and they don't feel included. And therefore, they feel less empowered to talk to us. And if we just cut out all the jargon that we use, that we forget we use because we use it every day, then we'll have much more fruitful conversations with them.
Couldn't agree more. Thank you so much, ladies, for your time today. Thank you to our listeners for joining. We really hope that you got some value there and really enjoyed listening to us. E4A, Let's Talk Rare, is brought to you by Partners for Access. To find out more about Partners for Access and our commitment to sustainable orphan drug and cell and gene therapy access, please visit our website, www.partnersforaccess.com. Make sure you search for Let's Talk Rare in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts, or anywhere else podcasts are found. Click to subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. On behalf of the team here at Partners for Access, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next month.